We were just discussing whether it's a crime to interrupt Bob Dylan and or Woody Guthrie, but we're going to do it anyway. This is Friday afternoon, the 21st of April, and on the phone with us we have Spring Lundberg, one of the plaintiffs in the infamous pepper spray case that's going on in the U.S. District Court in San Francisco. Are you there, Spring?
Yes, I am.
Good, good. Yeah, we can hear you just fine. So you were telling us that the plaintiffs, your side, concluded your portion of the trial this week, and so the defense will bring in their witnesses next week. How did things go so far?
We had a very strong finish to this last week of court. We wrapped up our case in chief Thursday afternoon, and several plaintiffs testified that day, including myself, as well as our police practices expert, Anthony Boza, who was a police chief for decades in Minneapolis as well as New York City. So he testified that he had reviewed the videotapes and found it to be extremely excessive force and cruel and inhumane treatment.
Really? Wow. That would be logical, of course, for an expert on your side, but he being, if he is the former police chief of Minneapolis, was it?
That's right.
Yeah.
And I think it's very powerful to present to the jury someone in an authority position who is siding with activists in this case. Actually, when the news first hit the TV screens all over the country about our case, There were a lot of outspoken police departments and senators and people that you wouldn't immediately expect to side with us on this issue. They just found it to be unconscionable because it had never been done before and it didn't seem to need to be done. So there must be some other reason, like pain as punishment for its own sake, for our beliefs. And since then, it's been many years, but the point of our case, in many ways, is memory against forgetting and showing that this civil rights case is still so important, even more important now, to bring a strong resolution to it, to make a statement about civil liberties. So back in the day, the law enforcement that were suing Humboldt County Sheriff and Eureka Police got scores and scores of hate mail, actually, and letters condemning what they had done. And some of these letters were from senators or police officers, and the denouncement was pretty across the board.
And logically it would be, but it, in addition, this whole concept of cruel and unusual punishment, the development of pain and punishment, as the neocons have been putting together their little strategy for the last few decades, they've been slowly but surely developing the concept that that prison is not for redemption, prison is for punishment. And that pretty much flies in the face of modern prison practice, modern being within the last 100 years. And so when you then have protesters who are to be deemed innocent until proven guilty, the idea of punishment cannot be meted out until you have a trial, until due process. So, yeah, logically, any modern police force would have to have been trained in that way. And it's, if I recall right, trying to think of who the police chief in San Jose, he was a famous author. I am trying to, I think Kennedy was his last name. If I recall right, he was one of those that supported the activists in this opposing the use of pepper spray, and so he was an early supporter. Even though you have the police chief from Minneapolis, are there others who have submitted written testimony for the court?
No. In fact, our presentation of the jury at times feels very curbed. Certain things are not allowed to be admitted into evidence, although they should be, and they're part of the larger story that would help the jury see what was going on these many years ago. For instance, a letter from former Attorney General Dan Lundgren saying that he tried to find an incident like this with Q-tips, with pepper spray, with lockdown protesters anywhere in the country, and he wasn't able to, and he found it to be clearly in violation of accepted police community standards. And that's a quote from his letter. So we were hoping to have that letter in evidence, and the judge denied it. And then subsequently during trial, the defense lawyer, knowing this, made some broad sweeping reference to the fact that since these incidents happened, the practice has been condoned by the Peace Officer Standards and Training Commission and the Attorney General. So we cried foul and said, hey, if we're not allowed to have this letter in from the Attorney General, how can they make a statement like that? So that's something we're discussing right now. In a surprise twist, we have issued a subpoena for former Attorney General Dan Lundgren. He's now a congressman. So we'll see what happens with that.
Yeah, and you also mentioned when we spoke last time that the FBI agent who had essentially authorized the use of pepper spray, he was commissioned by the pepper spray industry to bring it on the market, and he accepted bribes, kickbacks for doing so. That evidence was also apparently not admitted. Is there an attempt to try to get that admitted in addition, or has there been any camel's nose under the tent of that issue?
Well, the judge has ruled out evidence like that, but the way that we do get some of these important morsels of truth in and put it in the jury's mind is through the plaintiff's testimony itself, because if it goes toward our state of mind, then we're allowed to talk about it. And for instance, we know, I mean, in the activist community and in the informed community, we know that there have been many deaths suspiciously linked to pepper spray, and now tasers as well in an increasing amount. And we haven't been able to get a lot of science or studies to the jury about that, but when I was testifying, I was able to say that people with asthma and heart conditions have died after being pepper sprayed, because I knew that at the time, and that was my state of mind. And when they threatened pepper spray, that was the first thing out of my mouth. I tried to reason with the officers that they shouldn't do this, because a couple of us did have asthma. But really, the larger picture is we're looking at history and the way civilization kind of meets out its changes, and it really is memory against forgetting. For instance, when pepper spray was first approved for use, it was supposed to be sprayed on the forehead, well above the eyes, because it was going to be too dangerous to be used right on the eyes. And then people realized, oh, well, that's kind of unrealistic if there's an assailant coming at you. So, I mean, everything's a slippery slope, and that's why, as a community, our chance to stop a torturous practice is as soon as possible, and always should be, and that's why our case is still so important today. So yeah, I'm happy to talk about it with people, and it is not just about forest protests or any, you know, of us as individuals per se, but more holding the police to accountability. I was actually at a talk last night in Oakland at AK Press called Our Enemies in Blue, and we heard about the new book that's just come out, Our Enemies in Blue, and how the history of policing in America actually dates back to the slave patrols, back when slaves needed to be kept track of transporting them from farm to master's house or from farm to factory. And so these slave patrols would force slaves to carry ID and harass them. And then with industrialization, the slave patrols kind of morphed into city police departments. And, of course, their main target was people of color and poor people or the working class. So we shouldn't be surprised when today we see police guarding private property of corporations or, you know, representing big business, because that's where the roots are from.
Well, that's right. The old constabulary, that's exactly what you were talking about. And it's to the constables were hired to protect the property of the rich. And so slaves were a part of that, the property of the rich. So next week, the trial resumes with the defense, the police, trying to defend their position. Do you have an idea of who they're going to start off with and what to expect?
They're going to call several police officers as witnesses, some of whom are the officers that were doing the grinding of the lockboxes. And if people don't know about that, the sit-ins we were doing up in Headwaters Forest would often involve these metal sleeves that we would call black bears. They were welded together, and it enabled people to hold hands inside the pipes and not be immediately pulled apart and removed from a log deck or a bulldozer that was about to punch a road into the forest. It basically allowed us to put our bodies on the line and stay there as long as possible. And every long minute or every hour that we could postpone the logging was very important, because it's not just like we were breaking the law as trespassers. Actually, the corporation, Maxam Pacific Lumber, was breaking huge environmental laws time and time again, and often the courts would come down with a decision saying, yes, they did in fact break the law with this cutting, but they already would have cut the trees. So it would be a sad victory. The trees were cut down, and nothing's going to bring them back. So that's why it's so important that direct action and civil disobedience work hand in hand with lawsuits and other efforts, because sometimes, you know, a lawsuit takes a long time, as in our case, and we need something immediate on the community level to slow down the cutting. So hopefully the case will wrap up mid-next week, and the jury will get to talk about it amongst themselves and deliberate. And anytime we speak truth to power, it's a very important thing. But we hope this time it won't just be the act of speaking truth to power, but then we'll get a unanimous verdict that says police torture is not okay in this time and age in the U.S.
Well, that's right. As we're seeing with Abu Ghraib, this cruel unusual has become very predominant. The Bush administration, these neocons, are certainly moving forward with their, every time they get caught, apparently Abu Ghraib has far more prisoners, thousands of more prisoners to this day than there were even as the torture was getting exposed. So, and many of the allegations seem to be on the rise even after the exposure of it. So,
it's incredibly tragic, and I know that many people feel despair, and the questions on all of our lips, what do we do with this information? How can we really digest it and take action and be responsible for living in this country that is really causing misery on a global level in so many ways? When I testified Thursday, I was very encouraged to be allowed to actually sing to the jury. In the last trial, in our second trial, the judge did not allow me to sing a song, and this time I was able to, because we were singing a particular civil rights song at the time when they started using the pepper spray. We were trying to hold together, be strong, and hold on. So I'll share with the listeners the song that I sang for the jury just yesterday.
Good, do.
Hold on, hold on, keep your eyes on the prize. Hold on, hold on, hold on. Hold on, keep your eyes on the prize. Hold on, hold on. The only thing that we did right was we locked down and began to fight. Keep your eyes on the prize. Hold on, hold on, hold on, hold on. Keep your eyes on the prize. Hold on. Hold on.
And hold on we shall. That's Spring Lundberg, one of the plaintiffs in the infamous pepper spray case that's going on here in San Francisco. The Ninth District Court, the so-called liberal court of the federal judiciary. And this being the 22nd of April, the case, the plaintiff's case, was brought to arrest, almost completely. As you mentioned, there will be an attempt to add testimony from Dan Lundberg, or Lundgren, it is. Yeah, he was actually one of the neocons of sorts. And Dan Lundgren, being the Attorney General of California at the time, who also, neocon that he was, also contended that it was cruel and unusual punishment. So even though officially the plaintiffs have brought their case to arrest, there is some possibility of continuation into next week. And then, of course, the defense will bring their case as well.
And hey, we're hoping for people to come help us pack the courtroom. It really makes a difference, and it feels really strong in there to have all our friends and family and community supporting us. So please come down and check out some good political courtroom drama. It's going to be closing arguments Tuesday or Wednesday, and you can find out directions to the courthouse on our website, www.nopepperspray.org. And it's near Civic Center BART, 450 Golden Gate Avenue, and we're up in courtroom 10 on the 19th floor. So thank you so much, and remember, power concedes nothing without a demand.
That's right. Thank you, Spring. All right, Spring Lundberg, good to hear from her. This concludes this interview of this segment of the case. We'll continue to run interviews as the case continues next week.